Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hi, this is Mike Keyes with ID the Future, and today we have the privilege of a conversation with Mike Flannery, who is Professor Emeritus of the University of Alabama at Birmingham. He holds degrees in library science from the University of Kentucky and history from Cal State Dominguez Hills. Mike has published extensively in medical history and bioethics. He even won an award, the Edward Kremers Award, prestigious award in 2001, for his writing from the American Institute of the History of Pharmacy. His most recent work, which relates to today's podcast, has been on the scientist Alfred Russel Wallace, who was a contemporary of Darwin. In fact, more than just a contemporary, Wallace was a co-discoverer, alongside Charles Darwin, of the idea of natural selection, of course, which was a central feature of Darwin's theory of evolution. The main thing that Mike Flannery brings out about this co-discoverer of natural selection was he was also an advocate of intelligent design. Surprise! So, Mike, first of all, welcome to ID the Future.
Hi, Mike. Thanks.
In fact, I was just thinking, since there's two Mikes talking to each other, it's sort of like the Mike and Mike ESPN sports commentator show, but we're historians of science instead of sports commentator. But I suppose that's interesting too, right?
Yes, indeed, it is.
And we're going to be talking about two guys who also had the same first names, Charles and Charles. Of course, Charles Darwin being one of them, but the other one, our listeners may not be familiar with, the geologist Charles Lyell. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this renowned geologist and friend of Darwin, Charles Lyell. What made the Charles and Charles connection interesting for you? Like, what sort of interaction between the two has caught your interest?
Well, the interaction, it's a really kind of a three-way interaction between Charles Darwin, Charles Lyell, and Alfred Russel Wallace. And it happened, I discovered this in the collected letters and papers of Lyell. There is a letter that is dated May 5th, 1869, in which Lyell is responding to Charles Darwin. Now, what happened was, a little backdrop on this to explain Lyell's letter, is that in 1869, in the April issue of the Quarterly Review, Wallace was reviewing Charles Lyell's 10th edition of The Principle of Geology, and at the end of a carefully examined and thoroughly critiqued essay, he basically is outlining the problem of the special attributes of human beings, how do we account for that, and he ends his essay review by saying, I believe that I have a true reconciliation, this is a paraphrase, but I have a true reconciliation of science and theology on this most momentous problem. And he says, we have to admit that the mind of man is itself a proof of a supreme mind. He doesn't go into detail as to what kind of mind, but it's proof of a supreme mind, and that we can trace the laws by means of which both the organic and inorganic world has developed, but we should not be ignorant of the fact or close our eyes to the evidence that, and this is his words, an overruling intelligence has watched over the action of those laws.
Now, just to clarify here for our listeners, so you're talking about Alfred Russel Wallace reviewing Charles Lyell's 10th edition of Principles of Geology, and this overruling mind conclusion based on the human mind. This is Wallace talking, Lyell talking, or both? This is both of their views.
No, this is what. Well, this is Wallace talking.
Okay.
And he said, you know, there's an overruling intelligence has watched over the action of these laws.
Okay.
And have directed the variations so as to determine the accumulating effect to really give us the kind of moral and mental nature that we have as human beings. Okay. So he's saying we have these laws of nature, but they're directed, they're guided. There's an overruling intelligence behind them. Well, when Darwin reads this, he's appalled. He writes back immediately to Wallace to tell him how much he disagrees with him, how upset he is, how disappointed he is. And it's even said that in his copy of the Quarterly Review, where this review appeared, he marks an emphatic no in the margin. So this really rattled Darwin. So now here comes in the Lyell piece. He goes running to Lyell for support. And obviously, as you know, have you seen this latest essay by Wallace of your Principles of Geology? And I'm sure, you know, Lyell had read it. And the response back to Lyell in this May 5th letter of 1869 that Darwin says, and I'm a quote here, "I rather hail Wallace's suggestion that there may be a supreme will and power which may not abdicate its functions of interference. Not without wonder that we should be permitted to give rise to a monstrosity like a polter pigeon." So the upshot of this is Darwin runs to Lyell thinking he is going to get aid and comfort from, by all accounts, probably the most important geologist of his day, and in many ways the most important scientist of his day, Charles Lyell, and he doesn't get it. Uh-huh. What he gets from Lyell is support of Wallace's overruling intelligence view.
Now, just to give a little background here, many of our listeners may not realize how much Charles Darwin really admired and relied upon the work of Charles Lyell going way back when he was on his famous voyage on the HMS Beagle. It's been said that he carried with him Lyell's very book, right? Principles of Geology, and deeply influenced him. And they've been longtime friends. So how does this sort of background figure into the importance of your discovery of this, hoping he would get support from Lyell for rejecting Wallace's intelligent design sort of inference that he was drawing from Lyell's work, but not getting that support from Lyell? How does this make it even more significant historically, Mike?
Right. Well, to give some context to this, this gets bound up with a sort of a fancy sounding term that I'll give some context for. It's called uniformitarianism. Now, that's a mouthful, I know, but it's relevant to, certainly relevant to Lyell and relevant to Darwin. You see, prior to Lyell, geology was dominated really by a theory of one way, shape, or another of catastrophism. In other words, geological change occurred through some kind of catastrophic event or intervention that disrupted a steady state norm of the Earth that was generally seen as a fairly fixed planet. Now, there were two schools of thought. There were the so-called Neptunists, which were led by a German by the name of Abraham Werner, who argued that the Earth's stratification arose from a turbulent global sea, and the Vulcanists, which were basically those who followed the French naturalist Georges Cuvier, who argued for a series of violent worldwide catastrophes that wiped out whole populations of prehistoric animals to be replaced with new animals suited to the new circumstances of their environment. Now, both of these views tended to support in one way or another biblical special creation. Now, Lyell changed this by a geology premised on uniformitarianism. Now, simply put, this is the idea that change, geological change, is very slow and gradual. And in fact, Lyell used an image of an ancient Roman building near Naples. And if the listeners want to look this up, they can Google it. It's the Temple of Serapis from a drawing by the American-born artist John Middleton. And the frontispiece of his Principles of Geology featured ancient Roman columns that were standing unharmed, perfectly erect, obviously through the centuries, but they were heavily scarred by marine sea creatures that had attached themselves to the columns that were now all raised high above the water level. Now, this scarring proved that the ancient Roman structure had at one time been submerged, but before that, obviously above water, proving that land subsidence was slow and in a constant state of flux. The fact that the columns stood perfectly erect and otherwise undisturbed also demonstrated that this change over time had not been catastrophic, but very slow and gradual. And then these conclusions could be drawn from observable facts. In other words, there stood the columns. You could see it and prove your theory that way. Now, it's probably worth noting that Cuvier had died in 1833, the year that third and final volume of Lyell's Principles was published, and Werner had been dead by that time for 16 years. So there never was an effective challenge from either camp to Lyell's theory. In any case, and here comes the key point, is Darwin adopted Lyell's gradualistic methodology and applied it to biology, insisting that, you know, basically natural selection operating over eons of time would modify and adapt species and eventually lead to the diversity of life we see today. Now, Lyell saw the importance of slow, gradual change in geology, but when it came to processes in biology, he didn't necessarily see it as blind and undirected.
Right.
And that's what Darwin missed. That's what Darwin didn't realize, I guess, the full force of Lyell's opinion in this regard until he got that letter back. And so that's why I think Lyell's ending comment is so interesting. Remember, he says right at the end, he says he's basically replying to Darwin. He says, no, you know, Darwin, you're wrong. Species are not the product of random selection or chance. He says, the power that developed the monstrosity of a polar pigeon, that's his ending comment in the letter, this would never have developed in a state of nature. So he's basically telling Darwin, your very example of domestic breeding is really the same power that developed humans. So special and unique in nature, humans are not on a continuum with the animal kingdom. So what's the difference? He says the difference here is intelligence. In other words, he's telling Darwin that his very pigeon breeding example, his domestic breeding examples that he really opened his Origin of the Species book with, is a bad analogy if he's trying to apply it to blind processes, because artificial selection is not a blind process.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, because this parallel or analogy between artificial selection and then natural selection, which Wallace and Darwin both had worked on, and of course it was in the air, others had thought of similar ideas, but Wallace and Darwin were able to sort of codify this in a form that has made the most impact. And so Lyell is pointing out to Darwin, there's a problem with this analogy between artificial and natural selection because of the intelligence that's obviously involved in artificial selection. And yet natural selection, although the term selection implies intelligence, you know, I mean, intelligent agents select things, one thing as opposed to another, but Darwin was trying to frame it as a completely unguided process. So sounds like Lyell was sort of blowing the referee's whistle here on Darwin?
I think he was, and I think he was basically telling Darwin that he had crafted a bad analogy, that the way Darwin was trying to use the analogy simply didn't work.
Yeah.
Unless you wanted to imply intelligence, which is exactly what Darwin wanted to avoid.
Right. Yeah. You know, I was just thinking in Principles of Geology, published, you know, between 1830 and 1833, Lyell talked about how, you know, you explain the past in terms of actual causes known to operate today, and How does that relate to how he sort of blew the referee's whistle on Darwin? What sort of implication is there here for, okay, you explain the past in terms of present causes. Well, what about intelligence? How does that work?
Right. Well, I mean, I think what he's emphasizing here is, yes, you explain the past by present causes. Well, now, Darwin thought that he had done this with his domestic breeding analogy. But what Weil was pointing out to him is, yes, you explain the past with present examples, but they have to be parallel.
Yeah.
And I think what he's telling Darwin is your attempt here to craft an analogy about what happened in deep time in the biological past doesn't really apply to domestic breeding unless you're saying it's directed and guided.
Okay. Tell you what I want to do is I'm going to draw this to a close at this point, and I want to do a second podcast follow-up conversation to get deeper into the different nuances on this really big term uniformitarianism, what Darwin took it to mean, what Lyell thought it meant, and others since. So thank you, Mike, for joining us for this first podcast, and let's continue this conversation a bit later. How's that sound?
Okay, Mike, sounds good.
Okay, this is Mike Keyes with ID the Future, and we have had a nice conversation introducing Charles Darwin and Charles Lyell, plus the third guy, Alfred Russel Wallace. We're going to continue this conversation later. But in the meantime, you might want to check out a website that features Mike Flannery's work on Alfred Wallace, and it's simply alfredwallace.org. That's alfredwallace.org. So this is Mike Keyes with ID the Future. Join us again soon.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.